The Death of a Bitter Dream. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation presents a play by Len Peterson, based on the trial of Patrick James Whelan, an Irish patriot charged in 1868 with the murder of Thomas D'Arcy McGee, one of the leading figures in the founding of the Canadian nation a year earlier. The play is part of the series Famous Canadian Trials, produced in the Montreal studios of the CBC. The Death of a Bitter Dream. Parliament, the new Dominion of Canada's first, was sitting late. The Dominion was less than a year old, and there was much vital legislation to be attended to. That same night, somewhere in the shadows, was a fiery-eyed man nursing a pistol in his pocket, his bitter heart filled to overflowing with hatred that must kill. The man, his hatred enveloped, sat in Parliament that night and took part in an important debate. The wisdom of the Confederation of the British Provinces was still being questioned.
By and by, time will show us the constitution of this dominion as much cherished in the hearts of the people of all its provinces.
The most impassioned speech in defense of the Union was made by the member from West Montreal, Thomas D'Arcy McGee.
Our friends need have no fear that Confederation will be administered other than with serene and even justice. I speak not as a representative of any race or of any province, but as a Canadian.
That speech on the 6th of April, 1868, was to be Thomas D'Arcy McGee's last to the House. After adjournment, well past midnight, he chatted for a moment with the Prime Minister, Sir John A. Macdonald, then walked downstairs to the restaurant, bought a cigar, lit it, and made his way toward the main entrance. The cigar was his usual, inexpensive brand. But tonight, it seemed an especially good smoke.
Ah, D'Arcy, going my way.
Yes, Bob.
McGee left the house with a young MP, Robert McFarlane.
What time is it getting to be?
After two. Rather stormy session tonight.
I wish we could get rid of our cramped parochialism and create a real vision of what this country might be.
You push too hard.
If we don't, what will it ever come to, this country?
I'm too tired to argue.
I'm looking forward to a trip home to Montreal and a few good days with Mary and the girls.
These sessions are lonely, away from the family.
Why, what a bright moon.
Like day.
The two MPs parted at the corner of Metcalf and Sparks.
Good night, D'Arcy.
God bless.
The Buckley brothers, who worked in the House of Commons, came by.
Good night, Mr. McGee.
You mean good morning? It's morning now.
His last words. McGee walked along Sparks Street toward Toronto House, a tavern and rooming establishment run by Mrs. Trotter. Close by now was the bitter man in the shadows nursing his hatred and pistol. McGee, still smoking his cigar, took out his latchkey to let himself in. He was feeling for the lock when the bitter man hurried up behind him and, raising his pistol, fired. And Thomas D'Arcy McGee's soul left his shattered body.
Ottawa, April 7th. Awful assassination. The Honorable Thomas D'Arcy McGee murdered. Ball passed through head. The assassin still at large. Ottawa, noon, April 7th. Five persons have been arrested on suspicion. Patrick Buckley, a permanent messenger in the House of Commons. John Buckley, his brother, a sessional messenger. Peter A. Eagleson and his brother Patrick, who operate a tailor shop on Sussex Street. And a carpenter by the name of White. Ottawa, midnight, April 7th. A tailor by the name of James Whelan was arrested half an hour ago at the boarding house of Michael Starr on Clarence Street, which for some time has been regarded as the headquarters of the Fenian sympathizers hereabout. He appeared extremely nervous and agitated.
Thomas D'Arcy McGee was buried in Montreal on April the 13th, 1868, his 43rd birthday, and mourned by a shocked nation.
The list of arrested is a long one, but the weight of evidence seems to grow strongest against the tailor, James Whelan. He was arrested on the day of the crime with only slight evidence against him. But since then, the evidence has been mounting and is sufficient now to bring him to trial.
On the 7th day of September, 5 months after the assassination, the trial of Patrick James Whelan commenced. The courthouse was a converted jail. At 10 minutes to 10 in the morning, The prisoner walked into the courtroom, had his handcuffs removed.
Thank you.
And stepped into the prisoner's dock. He was well-groomed in a black frock coat, white waistcoat, large gold watch chain, and gray pantaloons. His dark brown hair was carefully brushed back and pomaded. His hair and beard, rimming a pockmarked face, gave him the look of a lion. He seemed too calm.
Don't worry, James.
His wife sat immediately behind the prisoner's dock, and the two were able to converse with ease. Mrs. Whalen was considerably older than her husband, and more careworn and nervous.
Order! Order!
At 10 o'clock sharp, Chief Justice Richards was escorted to the bench by the sheriff, and the trial commenced with a selection of the jury.
Juror, look at the prisoner. Prisoner, look at the juror.
I have looked and looked and challenged 21 men, for I feared they were lovers of England and haters of Ireland, or haters of all men and wanting to send another from this earth.
All right, take your seats.
It's hard for a prisoner to have much fondness for a judge, and that one has a terrible power over me.
Jurors of Our Lady the Queen, upon their oaths present that Patrick James Whalen, on the 7th day of April, in the year of our Lord, 1868, at the city of Ottawa, in the county of Carlton, did feloniously, willfully, and of his malice aforethought, kill and murder one Thomas Darcy McGee. A true bill.
Aye, and he'll hang for it.
Who said that?
Jimmy, don't lose your temper for your own sake.
Oh, these people come into gate.
Well, Jimmy, please.
Yes, darling.
May it please your lordship, the gentlemen of the jury.
Oh, Mary, Mother of Jesus, make me lawyer cleverer than the Queen's. Is it lucky I am, or unlucky to be defended by a Scotsman, Cameron, and to be having an Irish QC O'Reilly fixing to hang me with his questions? Will the Irish never stick together?
The Crown Prosecutor will proceed with his evidence.
I should like to begin by calling Reuben Wade to the stand.
Reuben Wade? You are Reuben Wade?
I am.
You swear that the evidence you shall give touching the matters in question shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Mr. Wade, have you ever seen the prisoner before?
Yes, in Montreal on the 21st of December last, in the sitting room of a house kept by Michael Duggan and his wife. The papers then were full of news about the Fenian troubles in England and Ireland, and you couldn't go anywhere without hearing talk of it.
More shooting and hanging. Ah, they hanged the three Irish lads for killing that policeman in the Manchester riots.
Ah, and it'll just make more riots.
But the Fenians here are no trouble these days at all.
The Dominion can be thanking Darcy McGee for that. Though 20 years ago, he was rebelling for Ireland.
Gone soft. Here's to him.
Aye. A poor excuse for a drink is better than none.
And you, Smith, brooding over there, will you drink your darling boyhood idol?
The Fenian Brotherhood do fought with the boys in blue, and we'll go and capture Canada, for we've nothing else to do.
Sullivan, you'd better forget that song.
It was a grand scheme. Was it not a grand scheme to strike at Great Britain through Canada? The United States full of Irishmen, thrain for fighting through, just finishing up the Civil War and wanting to do something for their homeland. New Ireland, that was to be the name when this country was liberated. New Ireland!
A grand scheme, till it sputtered out like pouring a barrel of water on a flickering candle.
A different ending if the Irish in Canada had rallied to the cause.
That's all the doing of Darcy McGee, scolding us like a parish priest.
Knock him out of his seat in Parliament, I say.
Knock him out of his carcass.
And what would you be meaning by that?
It's plain enough.
A scheme isn't always a good one just because it's dreamed up by an Irishman. I've had enough of crazy schemes.
And whose year will you be going after?
I'm not an informer.
Let him go, Smith. See what McGee is doing to the Irish. And we don't shut him up soon. Smith here's our man, eh, for the job.
Why do you sometimes call him Smith, sometimes Sullivan, when you know his name's Whalen?
Duggan, I've gone back to Whalen since my brother Michael went to Quebec City for the cause and got drowned. I don't want the police linking his name and mine. He may have had papers on him.
Incriminating?
Aye.
Darcy, poor devil. If he only knew the fate that awaits him, he would fly. And it would not be the first time, either.
And it would not be for the first time either. Mr. Wade, what did that mean?
Well, objection. The witness's opinion is hardly valid here.
Forget the question. What did you hear next?
I had to leave, then.
Your witness.
Mr. Wade, what nationality are you?
Unfortunately, English.
You knew the landlord, Mr. Duggan, well?
No.
And he allowed you to hear this conversation?
They seemed shy at first, but as they kept drinking, they forgot me.
Did you hear every word that was spoken?
No, I won't say that.
Then, what you did not hear might give quite a different meaning to what you did hear.
I'm just saying what I heard.
Thank you.
Mr. John McGee, you are related to Thomas Darcy McGee.
He was my half-brother, and I lived with him on St. Catherine Street in Montreal.
You were at his home last New Year's night?
Yes, when the accused came to see him. It was between 1 and 2 a.m. I didn't want to let him in, but Darcy said you can't always tell a dog by his hair.
Darcy McGee. When I was a lad back home, my mother was full of praise for you and the other young rebels who tried to free Ireland after the Black Potato Famine.
What I did then was of no help to the old country.
Every blow struck helps Ireland.
It's late. What do you want?
I've come to warn you to go easy on the Fenians.
You warn the Fenians to let their bitter dreams float away. I've tried their way, and the only fruit is more bitterness and blood-stained bodies. We have the chance here in Canada to show the British that the Irish are not forever troublemakers. Not when they're treated with any decency and justice.
What effect has it had on the treatment of our people back home?
Give it time! But the Fenians can bring enough discredit on the Irish population in Canada to embarrass it for generations. That is why I attacked them.
What are you, another Fenian?
Me? I've come to warn Mr. McGee. I overheard some men in the tavern saying, this is the night McGee's house is to be burned.
Well, since you've come here to warn me, could I impose on you to take a note to the police?
To the police?
I should tell you that not long ago in Quebec, a man who warned me of dangers came to an unfortunate end.
How?
He was found the next morning floating in the harbor.
Someone killed him?
No one knows. His name was Sullivan.
My brother. So he was seeing you just before he...
What are you doing with that pistol?
Did he warn you to shut up or be careful?
Put that away!
What have you come for?
You'll think I've come to kill you. But if my brother Michael meant no harm either... Here, take the pistol. To defend yourself. If anybody comes to harm you tonight...
Put it back in your pocket. Take this note to the police. And don't worry. As long as God has work for me to do, he won't allow me to be slain.
Don't worry. As long as God has work for me to do, he won't allow me to be slain. I heard my brother Darcy say it on several occasions.
Was any attempt made to set fire to the house?
No.
Your witness?
No questions.
And what can you be meaning by that? No questions.
Order, my lord. I apologize for my client. Look, Whelan, you must keep your...
Why did you not ask him if my brother Michael came to Darcy to tell him to shut up or be careful?
What are you talking about?
I never found out. I must know.
Now, Mr. Alexander Turner.
Turner? On the stand? Where'd they dig him up?
Do you know the prisoner?
Jim? Well, you might say too well. We often went drinking together. He was forever making hostile remarks about McGee. And when McGee was elected, he said, the bloody old pig will not reign long. I'll blow his bloody brains out before the session is over.
Your witness.
Mr. Turner, you say Mr. Whelan was always making hostile remarks about McGee. You must be able to give other instances.
Yes. One night when we went to the theatre to see Arana Pogue, and I
to
said...
To see what?
Arana Pogue, a translation of Shakespeare's As You Like It into Irish.
Go on.
Well, we'd been drinking and we were pretty swipey. Whelan said he'd take McGee's life as soon as drink a cup of tea. And then he says he was in love with a girl in Quebec. and that he didn't care for his wife.
Jimmy, did you say that?
He's lying. Lying.
That will be all, thank you.
There will be a 10-minute intermission.
Jimmy, who was she?
What? Oh, who?
The young girl in Quebec.
My brother Michael's girl.
But you were fond of her.
You'll believe a liar like Alex Turner?
Why would he say that?
Because he wants to see me hanged. The whole lot of them out there in the courtroom want that. You too now. You and me lawyer and me old friend Turner and the judge and jury. Leave me alone.
Jimmy, I'm with you.
Aye, so is me old mother. Oh, this should be pleasing to her.
Jimmy.
She'll not be ashamed of me now.
Jimmy, you refuse to go. So another one dead. But I'll never grow used to it.
Mother, what are you saying?
It's no worry of yours.
What has happened to Sean and John?
They fired the police barracks, but Sean was shot dead and John caught and locked up.
Sean dead?
Sean, who'll always be 14 years now, because you were a coward and wouldn't go with John. So the boy volunteered.
I knew they'd run into trouble.
Oh, what way can we go without running into trouble? Your grandmother Sullivan died in the famine of 47, and your father was shot trying to get food for his wee children. And not a day since has it not been a struggle, but
I'll
you...
I'll die for Ireland when there's something to die for.
He's running away to England and enlisting in the British Army and serving in India your way of dying for Ireland.
I did it to lighten the strain here.
And now you're off to Canada.
Why do you hate me, Mother?
I don't hate you.
You wish I'd been killed this night instead of Sean.
No one had been killed if you'd gone with John. You had a brave father and brave uncles and your brave brothers. But will you ever be more than a dandy and a toady to the British?
I wish to God my body was for laying out. No one would be having to mourn at all.
Are you brave enough to go claim Sean's body?
I'm brave enough for that, Mother. Brave enough for that.
Mrs. Mary Ann Trotter, what do you do?
I operate the Toronto House on Spark Street.
Where Mr. McGee boarded at the time of his death?
Yes.
Tell the court about the night he was killed.
Well, I was resting on the couch in the dining room. I never retire until all my boarders have come in. I thought I heard my boy. He works as a page in the house. And suddenly there was a bang and a flash. I thought it was a firecracker.
What did you do?
I opened the door, and it was all splattered with blood. And I saw a man in a stooped position on the sidewalk. And he had the face of a dead man. And it was Mr. McGee.
Oh, Mother. Are you still thinking your son Jimmy is a cowardly dandy? Tory into the British? Refusing to risk his carcass for Ireland's dream?
I've been reading the papers. And I've been praying for you, Jimmy. I know you did not shoot that fine man, Darcy McGee. It's not in your character at all.
No. I'm a man of the sword, like all the Sullivans and Whalens. You're a crafty old un, Mother. Writing in your letters what you write to fool everyone but me.
You had a soft heart when you were a small boy, and you've not changed. You'd not skin a rabbit. And sure I am no son of mine would shoot a man in the back without warning.
Who remembers, Mother, what any of the family have tried to do for Erin? Who remembers their names? But they'll not forget Patrick James Whalen. You know, and you're proud. It's between the lines in your letters, is it not, Mother?
Mr. O'Neill, what is your occupation?
I'm a detective officer of the city of Ottawa.
You arrested the prisoner?
Yes. Found a box of cartridges in his pocket, a Smith & Wesson revolver, and a ramrod for cleaning it. There was also a photograph of a young lady and badges from several Irish clubs.
Is this the revolver?
Yes. It was fully loaded. Five of the cartridges looked as if they'd been in there for some days, but the sixth looked new.
Oh, how?
Five had dirt on the ends. The sixth was clean. The mouth of the barrel showed a fresh discharge of powder.
Now, this bullet that killed Mr. McGee, would it come from that gun?
Yes, it could have. It's the same caliber.
Now, what did the prisoner say when you arrested him?
Nothing about the murder. But later I heard that he was singing and dancing a lot in jail, so I went and stood near his cell behind a pillar. A friend of his, John Doyle, was in the cell next to him.
Are you there, John?
Aye.
They're sure I'm the one shot McGee like a dog. Oh, if it was not for the whiskey, I never would have done it. Who's the informer?
So?
I was drunk as the devil.
I wish you'd never done it.
You said I was the one for it.
But we told you we'd given it up.
Because you thought I was too cowardly, taking so long. Well, I did it alone, John. All the others backed out.
And what'll happen to me?
You'll get out. It'll go hard for me. And I don't care a damn. Only for one thing.
What's that?
My poor mother back in Ireland. I've been sending her money. But me name will go down to posterity, and the old woman will have that. What a fine lot of boys she had. All fond of Ireland. And for that, they're all dead now. All in prison.
Jim. Oh, Jim. I'm sorry for you.
Life is sweet. But they have traced me step by step.
Mr. O'Neill, you have a most remarkable memory.
As soon as I left the jail, I wrote it all down.
While you were eavesdropping, could you see who was talking?
No, sir.
Thank you. That is all.
But when I left, I walked by the cell, so I got a good look at Doyle and the prisoner waiting. Thank you.
John Baptist Lacroix, where do you live?
Lower down, Greydon Street.
Where were you the night of April 6th and the early hours of the 7th?
6:30. I go up to Chaudière Flats to see about the job.
What time did you come back from Chaudière Flats?
1:30, two maybe.
Which way?
Along Spark Street. I see a man, he walk along the other side, in a black coat, and he limp a little. He's smoking cigar. He turn into Toronto House. And I see another man coming. Come up behind. Pistol in his hand. And he, bang! One man fall, other man turn and run. I back into the doorway to hide, but he come right to me. I see his face. The moon shining. Terrible. Did he run this way? And I run that way.
No, no, he's lying for pay. When I shot McGee, nobody saw me do it. Michael Duggan, where do you live?
In Montreal, till they arrested me.
You take in boarders and run a small bar?
It's Mrs. Duggan, mostly.
Did Mr. Whalen, the prisoner, ever come to your house?
No, I never saw the prisoner before.
Never? Mr. Reuben Wade swears he heard you and the prisoner and a third man planning last December to do some injury to Mr. McGee.
And for that, I'm in jail.
You deny it?
I'm sworn on the Bible, am I not?
Your witness.
Would you say that you are a hard-drinking man, Mr. Duggan?
Mrs. Duggan thinks so.
Isn't it possible that you did talk with the prisoner when you were on a spree and don't remember?
Can't a man take a drink without the whole country condemning him?
Did you know anything, Mr. Duggan, about a Fenian conspiracy in Montreal?
I know Darcy McGee was agin the Fenians for bringing the quarrels of the old country into Canada. Whoever killed him, if he was meaning to stir up the Irish in this country into a fighting mood, he's done the opposite. Men like myself, not thinking much of McGee when he was alive and trying his windness over to the path of reason and charity, see the greatness of the stubby, curly-haired son of Ireland now, cold in his grave.
Oh, if there's no praise for the murderer from Duggan, there's little praise from anywhere. Does the curse of a whole nation and the curse of God rest on the murder of McGee? Though my boots and fists were servants of violence, my heart is a lover of gentle peace. All my life, fear and shame have tortured me for my soft heart. When I tried to break free, I went after the man who was daring to show his gentle soul and mine. I tried to be a hero like Darcy McGee in his wild 20s. Oh, miserere domine.
No, it was not Patrick James Whalen who fired the shot. He could not kill, not Jimmy.
Milord! Milord!
Order!
I don't know at all why you're trying me.
Prisoner at the bar. This court neither hears nor sees you.
Whalen, sit down. Mr. Cameron, let me get up there and tell him all I know.
The worst thing that could happen, O'Reilly throwing questions at
you. Afraid of him, is it you are? But I'm not. I feel that the assassin, whoever he is 1,000 miles away or more. And no man is stranger than he to me.
Gentlemen of the jury, the crime that has been committed is abhorrent to all of us. Still remember, justice is not vengeance. Guilt is to be punished, but a victim is not to be immolated because the nation demands a victim.
Gentlemen, I leave you with your oath to well and truly try the prisoner at the bar and true deliverance make according to the evidence.
The jury will retire to deliberate.
They're coming back. The jury, watch.
See if they look at the prisoner's face. That's how you can tell what they've made up their minds to.
Oh, me dear. Me dear.
More than all else, kindness hurts. And you're kind. And I found so little in my life. So why I chose you. Oh, everyone thought it strange.
Jimmy.
No, I must be brave and show nothing. Brave like my father and Sean.
Gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, my lord. Guilty.
Patrick James Whalen, make your peace with God. There is no possible hope this side of the grave.
My lord, and gentlemen of the jury, Darcy McGee has won over all his enemies. And sorry I am... We are bound in death, struck down by the same assassin's bullet. Assassination never does anything for a cause but dig its grave. I ask forgiveness from all I have injured, and forgive all who have injured me. God save Ireland. God save my soul.
The Death of a Bitter Dream was produced in Montreal by Rupert Kaplan as part of the series Famous Canadian Trials. The script was written by Len Peterson, and leading roles were played by Henry Raymer, Eileen Clifford, Powis Thomas, Eleanor Stewart, Albert Miller, Paul Hecht, Gordon Atkinson, Gary Files, George Alexander, Walter Massey, Donnelly Rhodes, Ken Cully, Gerald Rowan, Philip Nielsen, and Margaret Cunningham. The program was presented by this station through the facilities of the International Service of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.